Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 421's After Show. I'm Terry Miller, the disc golf guy, with Johnny V. Holy cow, that was a wild ride. Nate, you master muted me, so our intro wasn't nearly as smooth as always, but I'll make up for it with this beverage.
Terry, I constantly have to master mute you because...
How are you supposed to open these?
What?
Like that, have this candle wax stuff. And real quick, we're gonna beer nerd out for a moment, folks.
All right, hold on. I'll show you how to do it. I'll be right back.
Right. Well, I've already done it.
I know, but I'm going to show people how
to
do it. He's apparently going to show you, Terry.
Yeah, so some fancier beverages, apparently, like to dip it in wax. I don't know if that's extra special to be like, hey, this is where
Wait, where did my shot go?
So bougie.
Where did
yeah,
my...
I don't know why you're not on screen. That's how you look to me right now. But anyway,
that's true.
And there's a whole bunch of wax that covers it.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
My camera died.
Who pours mud into a beverage glass? I do.
That silly camera.
I would just like to say I am supporting local beverage.
I wonder if the camera is running out of battery, even though I have it plugged
in
externally.
And who's to say that you're not, Johnny, you are currently ruining our show.
I'll say this.
I'm sure I am.
The camera that we are using here doesn't even work on
batteries. It's older than Nate Doss.
Yeah, I have it plugged into my... I'll change it. I have it plugged into USB into the surge protector, but I wonder if just because it's streaming, if it runs out of batteries. That's a really good thing to check now. Okay, that's good to know.
Wait, it has battery?
It is...
Camera?
I mean, I'm using like a small DSLR kind of camera, so it does have a small battery, and then it also plugs in external power. So,
all right, here we go. Johnny, if we're going to see your face,
there we go.
We don't have to, but
I'll fix it.
We can do an official opening. Okay, here we go. Nate's going to get in on it.
I'm in on the opening?
Do you know how the after show works?
No.
No, you don't. You got to go after show like us.
Okay.
All right, Johnny, I don't know if we're going to see your face. Here we go. Let's do it again. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 421's
After Show.
If we're not a trio, I don't know what is. All right, so
welcome. I have a more deeper voice, though, Terry.
Yes, you do. All right, so as always, our after show, if it's not apparent, can go off the rails. It may or may not be disc golf related. We can talk a little bit about anything and everything. Largely, though, it finds its way back to disc golf. Please feel free in the YouTube comments to leave us any questions. We'll try and get to those if so. Scout Recycler, no, I am not drunk. All right, so real quick,
I am very excited
and feeling warm. Is my face red? It's so sunny in here. So a at one point, let me back up. Whenever I'm in town, Nate and Val often take me to local establishments. Of course, they own Bevel, very successful, and a great place to be. However, they don't necessarily always want to be at the one place that they own and work. So we go to a number of nearby establishments, check out local breweries and or food carts, which I think is important as they also host a number of food carts at their property and facility. And one place we had gone at some point in the last year is to this Crux.
Yep.
Brewery.
Crux Fermentation Project is the official name.
Ah, so fancy.
No brewery on there.
This is a Lost Love.
Oh, there's Johnny.
Is a barrel aged
Imperial
Rye Stout.
Right there.
Yeah, I'm using the backup cam for now. We'll see what happens.
All right. This makes me feel uncomfortable.
Keep going.
So this is Crux Lost Love Barrel Aged Imperial Rye Stout. I had a number of stouts. We had a flight? Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Flight tester of them. And let's be fair, I liked them all. And then so when I saw this at a local beverage depot the other day, I decided to pick up a bottle of it. Now, talk to me a little bit about the candle waxing and the proper procedures.
Okay, so typically when you have a beer that's bottled, you're going to use a bottle opener. When you have a waxed beer, for those of you who don't know, and Terry obviously doesn't know this, you have a wine opener, right? So this has your corkscrew. It has your actual bottle opener. But most of them have this little knife right here. And Terry, that's what you use
to gut people.
What? No.
That's awkward.
This is the knife you use, and you kind of just cut just right below the bottle, like the bottle cap, and then you pop it. This would also be used to cut the foil on a wine bottle. So that's the proper tool. Clearly, you've gotten into it without it.
So I've got all the proper tools I need.
You can just kind of go ape on it and just get in there.
I can chew on it if I need to. I will get into that damn bottle.
So that's how you do it, Tear Bear.
All right. Appreciate that. So we are enjoying a 2022 Imperial Rye Stout aged in rye whiskey barrels. 14.5%. 70 IBUs. The IBUs.
IBUs, International Bittering Units, is what that stands for, Terry.
Do I like them with a higher or lower, or do I
care?
The
lower, the better.
For me? You,
yeah. You're all about the sweetness.
Oh, yeah. I don't like the bitters.
You're all about the sweetness. Well, I'll say this. That was my first full interview that I was ever a part of with a fellow professional disc golfer.
You said it. You did the Macbeth interview after Worlds. You were there. I mean, it wasn't a full interview, but...
Yeah, that one, you're absolutely right, Johnny, and I was already kind of thinking that. That one just felt, we were there to just let Paul, you know, celebrate, and we were actually celebrating with him in that moment. You know, we were never going to ask, like, some odd question about something he said in the press conference before the show, you know, before the tournament. So that one was fun, and I think Terry really helped in that one. Obviously, I could have never done that by myself, but just to even not even ask questions for a while and just like listen to Ricky talk was awesome. For me personally, just Terry's still got this little hacky cough.
Yeah,
this
tiny little cough.
Yeah, he's a hack.
Let me ask you, does it all these years removed, does it feel at all awkward talking to our sport's top athletes, knowing just a few years ago you were one of them?
No. No. In fact, I'll say I'm actually excited about it, because I think for me the biggest thing is just hearing the mentalities and watching people grow and adjust. Nobody's perfect. You know, nobody has the exact right answer, the exact wrong answer, whatever it is. And My mind goes back to when people ask me questions, which is I liked every question because it just gave me an opportunity to start to put down in words what was my opinion on something. Because as an athlete, having an opinion it only lasts for so long. After a while, people stop caring what you have to say. So to still be sitting on this side of the table and to ask Ricky or even just to listen to the questions you or Johnny asked, I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. I never felt awkward whatsoever because if any of the players know me, they know my only goal is to make them bigger and better. Like, that's my only goal.
Well, except for being the biggest Macbeth fanboy in the world, which you're accused of daily. You know that, right?
Why would we not be? I mean, he is literally the best player of all time. Ricky is pretty darn close, and he continues to get better and better as the tournaments and years go on. Why wouldn't we be fans of him?
Yeah.
But we also rack on him a lot.
Yeah, and that's what people seem to forget. And I think that's what's probably been my most interesting component. I keep up on the socials a little more than you. And the amount of people that think you are just a diehard fan of Paul in particular, but really of any player, and I feel like they quickly forget that you are the first person to also rightfully criticize a player. It's mind-blowing. And so to set the record straight for the entire world, you appreciate what Paul does, and you clearly cheer for him in his triumphs, but you're not above criticizing any player, Paul included.
Oh, absolutely not. And I say this on the broadcast time after time after time. He would not want it any other way. See, I'm in a very unique position in life, in this life that we're talking about. When Paul came into disc golf, I made him better. When Ricky came into disc golf, I helped make him better. See, I was that guy that was better than them, and they were like, wow, I need to get at least as good as Nate or Avery or
Felberg
or Climo or whoever it was. And then at some point, that flipped. And I'll say it flipped right around 2012. I stopped making them better, and they started forcing me to get better. To where when you start to look at it, of course, I'm proud of all my world championships, and I think that each and every event that I was a part of as a champion was second to none, and I'll never forget it. Winning in 2017 is that moment for me. Because from 12 to 17, I never really was able to succeed at that level. So when I sit here now, I'm talking about the whole depth of their career from when they were literally, I was there the day we said, Rick, take the money. You're going to be great. Don't even play another AM term. It's not worth it. I was there in 2005 when Paul Macbeth was asking me for a free mini that I was giving away as the current world champion. And now I'm all these years later watching them continue to push the game forward. How can I not be proud of that? How can I not want to celebrate that? And how can I also not give them the respect of criticizing them when there's moments to be criticizable?
I feel like that's probably the number one misconception is people think you are unabashedly a diehard fanboy of Macbeth or of whomever. Usually it's Macbeth because they feel like there's a sponsorship tie or they feel like, you know, and people just can't get over that. And I've heard you criticize and or just call out any player on any shortcoming as an unbiased broadcaster. And that, to me, just people quickly forget that. And they always just think, oh, well, Doss is on Discraft and Paul plays for Discraft. So Doss is just like totally loves Paul and that's all he talks about. And like, I just, if you really sit and listen to a broadcast, you'll understand that you're rooting for the best possible golf, as I think all of us broadcasters are. First, you're rooting for the best possible golf. And then your job is to also call the shots as they are, whomever that might be for. And it's funny to me that I will read, oh, Paul, Doss loves Paul so much. And then some people are like, oh, Doss just hates on Paul so much. And so you see it from both sides and you're like, well, which is it? And quite honestly, it's just us doing our job. It's you don't wake up in the morning with like, well, I have a bias toward this person. I like that person, but I really don't like this. And here's how I'm going to, you know, shape my narrative today. You're just calling the shots. You're just calling what's going on. You 100%. Have nothing to gain.
Nothing.
By loving or hating any player on the course.
In fact,
that, I think, is beautiful.
I consider my job as to be the why. Why is this happening? Why is it in their mind? Why are they deciding to throw this way or that way? That's my job. And if they do something that the why is what? I mean, literally, like, why or what was that decision? And what people don't understand is that I'm not trying to be perfect. I was not a perfect disc golfer. In fact, I made a lot of mistakes on and off the course in life. And so you don't judge it based on that. Everybody makes mistakes. But in that moment, you have to say, yes, that was a mistake. That was not the right play. That was a mental lapse. That was they look physically injured. Whatever that might be. I think that, to me, is, why there's commentary. I mean, that's kind of the job.
Yeah.
Wow. You know? And look, I respect everybody who has their favorite player and their least favorite player. I was asked that question at Worlds a couple of times, like, who do you want to win? Who's your favorite player? My answer is always disc golf.
Yeah.
My answer is always disc golf.
I want the fans to win.
Well, the fans are the luckiest people out there in the world because they get to sit back and watch it. You know, one of the hardest jobs to do is to be Ricky and to be Paul, not as champions. Right? When you don't win.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is win.
Yeah.
From just, you know, the celebration and all that. But I don't know. I enjoy all of it, Terry.
Wow. It's pretty crazy, the positions that we've put in all these years. So maybe my question, you were talking a moment ago about the media. Explain, what was media even like? I'm going to rewind literally 10 years ago to when maybe Macbeth won his first Worlds, or a year or two before that, Disc Golf Planet TV, Disc Golf Guy Channel was literally just getting started in January of 2010. What was disc golf media like in the height of your career?
I mean, if you look at it from the height of my career, so if you were to just say a height of my career was from 2005 to, say, the end of 2011.
Okay.
Which I would say if you...
Yeah, you won your first Worlds in 2005, you won your second Worlds in 2007,
on the PDGA,
and you won your last Worlds in 2011.
But I also went on to actually have a really successful end of the 2011 season, so we'll just say the end of 2011.
Okay.
I had a lot of great performances between 2011 and, say, the end of the middle of 2018 when I stopped playing. You know, but if you say that's the height, it started at nothing. It started at there's a camera crew at Worlds that's creating a DVD.
Or a VHS, even?
No, it was a DVD.
You were in early DVD.
I forgot. You're one of those young bucks. You had the DVDs.
2000 was my first Pro Worlds, and I think that still might have been VHS.
Yeah, it was.
And then by 2005, it was. So it that was media.
Okay. Yep. One week out of the year, there was a camera crew that was covering Worlds, and then usually produced essentially a final nine video.
Correct.
That was DVD based. Okay.
Correct.
Yep.
And they had little, like, here's what happened in round twos and threes and all that.
Maybe, yeah.
Snippets. Yeah,
snippets.
To 2011, Disc Golf Planet was actually covering the World Championship live.
Yeah.
And I remember Johnny V. Mm-hmm. I actually remember very specifically turning around at one point and saying, Johnny V, you got to shut up. I can hear you.
I say that 10 years later. I'm still saying, Johnny V, shut the F up.
Because as we know, back then, it was my job, and I volunteered for the position, was I got to carry a backpack for Terry Roddy, which was the same kind of backpacks that the guys are using now, but I think it was probably only 3G, maybe 4G, but I think it was just 3G. I got 3G, to Terry Roddy was doing the camera work. Dave Greenwell was standing next to me, and because I was the guy carrying the backpack, I got to be co-commentator for the round.
Yes.
And so literally we're talking about the players 20 feet behind them when they throw. And so it's like, yeah, Nate Doss just Nate's up to throw. He clipped a tree on the right hand side, fell in the fairway, and you have to hear that. And yeah. I remember it was awkward for us. It was awkward for you guys, but it was the way we had to progress. It was the only way to do it because we didn't have these type of Skype kind of options that we do now. It was just, that's what the players have to deal with if they want. I remember thinking that in the past, like, man, if they want to be like big time stars, they have to be able to hear this stuff from us as the media. And I have a slightly different perspective now, but it is kind of the same. I feel the same way now when, these players have to get used to the cameras in their face. They have to get used to spectators being near them. They can't have the perfect stillness behind the basket that we had 10 years ago because you've got 50 to 80 to 100 people in their sight line now, and someone's going to move or breathe or turn or drink. It was a progression, but you're right. I specifically remember. Umbrella. Or move an umbrella. Yeah, I remember that. I specifically remember that.
I remember just having to, on a more regular basis, have cameras around. On a more regular basis, have more spectators around. And when it happens slowly over time, it can be a little jarring at times, but then it becomes more comfortable, and then you start to get used to it. And then, after 2011, which again, it was not the height of my career, but still as one of the best players and, working my way through tournaments, there was just more. There was more. And then the kind of Disc Golf Planet ended and the post-production era started with McFly So High, and then Jomez and Terry was out there and several other productions. And after a while, I would say when I left in 2018, I was so comfortable with everything that I didn't notice anything. I didn't notice cameras. I didn't notice people.
Yeah, but for the most part, and here's maybe the payoff question is, for the most part, you went through the majority of your career, successes or otherwise, almost uninterviewed, unspoken to,
uninterviewed.
For the most part.
I was interviewed by you a couple of times.
Yeah, because I knew you. And I'm like, oh, hey, let's chat after you just finished your third round at the Memorial or whatever the case was. But for the most part, there were not press conferences.
No.
There was not post-round interviews, especially if you didn't win. Maybe there was if you won, because I stepped in and asked a few questions. But for the most part, just disc golf media entirely – just 100% a different ballpark there. And I don't want to say it was non-existent, but it was 90% less.
Yeah.
Well, it's 95% funny less than what it is today.
I listen to a lot of other media, disc golf and other sport related. And you hear some of these other podcasts, maybe they'll talk about like, man, were these events, as big or talked about back in like the early 2000s or late 2000s. And I'm like, no, because no one was talking about him. No, there was no way to talk about it. You either chatted on a chat board or you waited for a DVD to show up, but there was no interaction. It wasn't like we had AM radio with, there's been Packers post-game shows for the last 30 or 50 years after a show. Yeah. There was nothing. You couldn't do that unless you called up a buddy and talked to him. So when people talk about, was the Players' Cup back in the day, that was a major. Was it as big of a deal as, and it's like, nobody knew. I don't know if it was as big to the players because nobody talked about it. It was just an event, and you didn't hear about it until you read about it in the magazine, and maybe there was some brief, a clip of something Nate said, typed out in the interview of whoever won the Players' Cup or whatever, but there was no media. There was not the amount of, and I think we're still.
Yeah, it was a lot of like emails, like, hey, here's 10 questions, answer these, and we'll put them in the magazine.
Yeah.
There was a lot of anticipation. There was a lot of anticipation when the magazine came to my door. Was I going to be on the cover? Mm. I didn't know. Nobody told me. And then all of a sudden, you make the cover or you don't. And so there was, these are all kind of the things that we went through. But to me, as I always say, this is kind of my saying, the road is more important than the destination, because that all of those things to me make what we're dealing with right now just that much better, because it was all building on each other, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I can think of two covers for sure that you were on. Was there more? Do you know?
I don't know.
I can think of two.
I think it's three.
There was two, but I can think of two in my head.
There was two pre-GMC, so I know that for a fact.
And then GMC.
So that would make three.
Remember when that was such a big deal, whether you made the cover or not? Now no one cares.
Yes.
Because it's still cool to that person.
But why would you?
I don't know if it is.
No,
I don't even know
cool.
if it is.
Yeah, of
anymore.
Course it is.
I don't know.
It is cool.
Is it as cool? Maybe not. Mm. But is it cool? Yes.
No, it's cool.
I mean, is it, you know, like at some point will we get, will you get sick of being on ESPN's top 10? Maybe.
No, you don't get sick of it. You just get used to it.
Yeah.
You're used to it.
But I mean, it's still cool. I don't care who you say.
No, I 100% agree. It is cool, but I'll say it's a little less exciting when you've already, so for Ricky's perspective and Kristen's, they won the tournament, they held the trophy, they were interviewed, they were photographed, they were celebrated. All of this happened.
They were podcasted.
They were podcasted. The photos were instantaneously on Instagram and
update to the Disc Golf Pro Tour page.
On websites. I mean, we were there at Worlds. They were in the other room. We were cleaning up the booth. Paul and Kristen were in the other room being photographed. That photo was on the PGA's cover or on the PGA's
background.
Website less than 24 hours later.
Yeah.
I mean, so is the magazine cover cool? Yeah. But by that time, you're already moving on in a way, in a weird way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
wild.
By the time the magazine cover comes out, it's old news. You may have gone through a cold streak.
You're in print.
You might be
in
already
full
out
color
of favor.
And on the cover.
I don't know. I think you ask. I'd be curious if and it's hard to get an honest answer. If you were to ask someone like Alden Harris, Gannon Burr, Anthony Barella, if they care that they're on a magazine, like seriously, it's
yes.
I don't know if they do.
I think the answer is yes.
I don't know. Do they care about magazines?
But I think they really do think it's cool.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it's just like no one cares about your fucking rating until all of a sudden it went up 5 points.
But it's generational. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Were we excited about being on covers of magazines? Yeah. But is somebody excited right now about having 100,000 followers? Yeah. Those were things that were never talked about before.
Well, I'm going to follow Dust. Dust, good to see you, buddy. Guess what? Your take's lukewarm at best when you say, will an FPO player hit 1,000? And if so, who will be Tatar? Yeah, I mean, that's...
If someone does it, it's going to be Tatar.
Journey for Paige.
But it's
not. And it felt like an obvious journey for Paige, who got to 996.
But it's not.
Now, with Kristen putting together... She's had 6 of her best rated rounds just this year, all, you know, ranging from 1,000 to 1030. And she averaged over like roughly 1,000 for the weekend. Kristen Tatar, you'd be an idiot to bet that anyone else will get to 1,000 before she does. Let's put it that way.
Yes. She is now the front runner for the first ever.
Yes.
I think that's the best way of explaining
it. And I'm ready for it. I'm here for it, as the kids say.
Oh. I'm going to say it's not going to happen.
Well, you can be dumb and wrong again.
Like she has to average over 1,000 for the next 3 months of tournaments. Because if you go back through her history, she's rolling.
Like cool.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know if she can keep it up. I mean, if you think she has hit. If you think this is just the beginning, that's one thing. But if you look back at her ratings, she's got a bunch of 950s, 960s, 970s, 980s, like all hanging there that won't go away until 930, 956. They won't go away until June. So she has to basically average 1,010 to 1,015 for the next 4 months until those drop off. I don't think
in 4 months,
I don't think
is
that's
a ridiculous thing.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm saying four months of
three
playing.
Events left.
Yeah. I'm saying 4 months of playing.
I
so
see. Yeah, yeah.
October,
yeah.
And then we'll say.
So say like next May.
Next May.
Next
yeah.
May.
Exactly.
Ish.
Like, yeah. I just don't know if
yeah,
that's,
I,
if that's
I get
continuously
it. It's,
attainable.
It's a tall task.
But you're no, right. If someone's going to do it, it's going to be her. I mean, that's
a
no brainer. Yeah, that's a no brainer. Even the Butler County event, she averaged 990. So
yeah, and only won by 67.
Yeah, but again, we don't care in this particular instance. We don't care what she won by. If you're talking about 1,000 rated, that's a different subject. So
yeah, well, 994, 987, 987. So yeah, I hear you.
I hope she does.
Will she get there? She may or may not. But yes, she is obviously the front runner mm-hmm. in getting there. There's
I
no
just,
doubt about
I,
that.
I what I
she's so
what
consistent.
I'll say is
so good.
I mean. If you're a Kristen fan at the moment, I really say like enjoy this moment because this she said in her post-run interview, I am living my dream. I am literally living my dream. And the post-run interview after post-run interview for her, she continues to just be so positive and so enlightening and just happy to be in the situation that she is. I hope that it's like that forever. But as if I'm a personal fan of her and several other FBO players, and I love to see that. I mean, mm-hmm. if you could have told me, you know, in 2005 or 7 or whatever, that I was like living my, I never looked at it that way. And I just love that she is because she's actually saying, yes, this is it. This is what I always dreamt of. And it's pretty cool, regardless of all the other stuff, yep. You know?
Yeah, I guess what I would say to that is find me somebody lay out Kristen Tatar's weakness right now.
The weakness for any great player is one thing, and it's called complacency.
Well, I mean,
I don't see that coming out of her.
No, I don't see.
I'm not saying
anytime
she
soon.
Is. I'm just saying that's the one.
I mean, you're saying like she gets bored with whooping everyone.
Yeah,
the one shot
but
that
right now,
the one shot that I don't see her throw very often because she hasn't needed to, is like a true Anheuser.
Yeah, because like a backhand Anheuser.
Like a backhand Anheuser, like a flip to flex Anheuser where you actually need something
sure.
big to turn over and come out. The thing that Kat does the best, like the is the one
for
thing
Heiser
to,
flips
but,
and turn
yeah,
over.
But,
yeah.
But Tatar doesn't need to
and
because
totally
she throws
agree.
Her forehand. But I mean she can work and around it.
Henna has an incredible standstill turnover.
Yes, she mm-hmm. does.
In fact, I would argue one of the best in our yeah. In mm-hmm. our game. The thing about Kristen and the thing about any great player is that when there's something that they maybe know or maybe subconsciously know they're not good at, they can play that hole in a certain way and just yeah. live to fight on another hole.
Yep.
She's sure. so good on other holes. Unless we come up on a course where it's 18 or I don't want to even be extreme, 12 out of the 18 holes that are soft turnovers that the sidearm doesn't work on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's in trouble at that course, but she can always just play that hole safe or put it in the fairway. And she doesn't throw that shot well because she throws really well just one-angled hyzers and a flip to flat. She
yeah,
does that so
she,
good.
And she might be able to throw them okay and just doesn't need to, doesn't put herself in that position. I don't know, but we'd never see her throw them And because she always go to a different angle, she'll try a different shot if she has to, because she knows that that's
and it's
she's
just the
probably
mental
stronger.
Strength.
Oh, she's
it's like the pressure she puts on the other like come the final round, the other competitors are like, oh my god, can you just crack a little?
Mm-hmm.
Think of the final round of Worlds. Think of the final round of GMC. Think of the final round of DDO.
It's kind of like that Ricky mentality where when Ricky went out of bounds, he kept hitting putts. Tatar was the same way. It didn't matter how far away she was. It felt like she was getting that stroke. If she was inside 45 feet, she was solidly hitting those putts, if not whatever. And she didn't give the competition a chance to catch her, which is unique as what we've seen in the past with FPO, because Terry and I have often commented like, oh, cool, someone's up by four strokes in FPO going into the final round. Is it Paige? Is it Kat? Is it whomever? Okay, that could change in three holes the way the FPO used to be. You don't get that with Tatar. With Tatar, it's like she's up by three. It feels like she's up by 30.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to have the blow up. You're not going to have the absent minded, you know, miscue. You're not going to have those types of things. She's just not there.
What did you think of Ricky's perspective when you asked the question about Kat and Paige, which was that Kristen was pushing them? That was kind of the way I read it.
You know, and what I'll take away from it is that Kat and Paige maybe just coincidentally have had an off weekend or an off year or whatever you want to call it. Clearly,
I mean, Paige still has won.
Yeah, an off month.
Majors.
Yeah, you could say it's an off month.
Yeah, I know, and it's so funny to try and get critical when you're talking about it. And I think back to Paul this year, who's like performed very well, but to his standards, not quite as high as what we've experienced in the last few years.
Yeah, he's the top of the Pro Tour standing. Well, now second.
Yeah, second. But you're like, wait, is he having an off year or not? Like, you know what I mean? And that's the way I think about, like, a Kat and Paige. Like, you know, Paige will always say, like, I'm here. I'm ready to compete. I'm ready to go. It's just Kristen has taken all of the spotlight, understandably so. And she's deserved it. And so it's just a change of the guard to see someone like Kristen or Kat not, or I'm sorry, Paige or Kat not on top. It's just not the norm. And Kristen, and it's not just like they've been laying back and you know, Kristen like snuck into that category. Kristen's like, no, hey. Yeah, why don't you step aside? I'm going to like claim this podium.
And what I love
with authority
is that she doesn't do it that way.
No, she doesn't do it outwardly. But she does it quietly.
Exactly. And I love that she's
even
doing
worse
it in a country that's not her own home country.
Yeah, she does it subtly,
so subtly. I just love the gangsterness of that. That's so gangster.
Yeah.
Ryan Pilcher writes on the board. I totally agree. That he used a ratings projection tool to calculate if Kristen shot 1,015 rated for the next 22 rounds of golf, and the 22nd round was played in April, then she'd crest 1,000. So that's not going to happen. Correct. Yeah, she has to shoot 1,015.
Like, you're saying that's
like
not
statistically
possible?
Not possible, but not likely.
She has to average 1,015 until April.
Bingo. Yeah, that's a pretty big ask.
Run this out till this time next year. Mm-hmm. Say next year's Worlds. What does she have to average between now and next year's Worlds to get to 1,000? We're talking about the quickest she can get to it, but what is it going to take to get to it? That's what I'm most curious.
Not in the
quickest amount of time.
If she's rated 987, that'll probably possibly go up a little bit. You got to figure she's going to have to average like 1,010, right?
All the way till next year's Worlds.
Until next year's Worlds, that's maybe 1,007 or something. But depending on what drops off and what her deviation and crap is, but yeah, she's proving that she can do it. It's just, can she continue to do it? And
can she sustain?
Yeah, you've got also issues with her playing small events overseas where there is no like high rated players for her to push up those ratings. So if she plays
those
little events.
Do you really expect her to do much of that though? I feel like
she
did a lot of that because of COVID.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll be the norm. Yeah. I feel like when she gets back, there'll be events will be far and few between.
Maybe. I mean, they run a disc golf company.
She's not going back to Estonia until October. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
She's going to play the Throw Pink. She's going to play the Tour Championships. She's probably not getting back to Estonia until just short of November. I can't see a lot of events that she's concerned about playing PDGA sanction that will be between November and next year's Las Vegas Challenge.
And then we have to guess that she's going to just tour all next year. We don't know. I mean,
yeah, I'm going to assume so.
I'm assuming she is.
Someone asked earlier something about her daughter.
That's a long time away to be.
And her daughter, as of right now, is in fact in Estonia
to be away from a family member. If you come next March,
oh sure,
and then you're going to tour until June or July, and then go home for a couple of weeks, and then come back. I'm just saying that it's a tough life for a mother of a young kid to just leave your family for months at a time without your daughter. It's going to be difficult.
I do it all the time.
Well, I know you do.
Suggesting, though, that she's not going to do it next year?
I'm saying I don't know. I don't know how much time she's going to spend here. Is she going to wait? Is she going to come for Las Vegas and then stay for two events and leave? Is she going to come here and just play all next year? I don't know, because, again, she's got a daughter who's 13. You think she wants to be away from her family for 6 months, for 4 months? She's not heartless like you, Terry. Heartless!
That's true.
now, Evelina and Hannah are a different question. I don't think they have any ties over there, so they could easily come here in late February, mid-February, roll through here for 6 months and not think twice of it. Tatar's a different story. I don't know the answer to what's going to happen, and hopefully everything is set so she can do that, and then she spends all winter with her daughter, and then she can spend the summers here, but I don't know that. So I hope she comes, because I think she makes the sport exciting and, you know, well, actually she doesn't. She makes it less exciting because she crushes everybody. So I guarantee you what's going to really be funny.
Like I told Terry. Go on, Johnny.
I was going to say what's going to be really funny. And it's going to fit right into the stereotype is when she leaves or the first event she's not here and Paige or Kat wins. Just wait for that.
Everyone's going to say, well, they only won because she's not here.
Oh, exactly. It's not going to matter. And
right.
And that's just it. Because at some point,
here's my final statement on that. You can only beat the people that show up.
We all would know that.
That's my official line.
That's how it works. And it doesn't. It's going to play to that bold statement. That sports radio thing I joked about earlier is Tatar mentally breaking Paige and Kat so they can't win? Just her being here, is that a big deal? And I don't know if it is. I'm not in their heads, and I would never venture to guess whether that's true or not. But just knowing that Tatar is in the field and the way she's playing has to put a lot of extra pressure on you to think, oh, I have to perform at the top of my game to beat her. And that might cause Kat and Paige to push, where they didn't necessarily have to do that. They looked at each other and thought, we have to beat each other. There's someone new in town who's playing very, very well. So I don't know the answer, but I'm excited for, I guess I'm kind of excited for next year. I'm looking forward to next year already. I'm done with this year. Let's be done.
I mean, let's think about it. Katrina Allen's the same age as I am. So 37, roughly, born in 85. Paige Pierce was born, I believe, in...
She's 32, 91. Right?
91. Yeah, and Kristen 31. Was born in 92. So, I mean, Kristen is the youngest of the three of them. Mm-hmm. If you just look at the age of, you know... I mean, all athletes are, you know... we have to look at our age. But you look at Henna and Evelina, and they're much younger.
Yeah, in their early 20s.
Plus... several of the, you know, the Valerie Montehanos of the world and the Kat Murchs of the world, they're all super young as well. So, you know, I think over the next several years, we're going to definitely see a migration, but that's just natural, just like Ricky said. And that's why I asked that question about Ricky. What did you think of his perspectives? I think he's right in a way, but... yeah, I guess only time will really tell, honestly. You know, it's just I because I don't commentate women's disc golf anymore, which I did for a full season with Val, like, I'm just a fan. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm just a fan of, like, it'll be interesting to see.
We were told years ago that the peak male performance for a golfer, for a ball golfer, was, like, 30-ish. Like, that was when they were hitting their peak. You know, they had the experience, they had the skill, their skills,
right.
And they weren't going. Is that going to be the same for a disc golfer? Because everyone kind of assumed back in the day that, oh yeah, you know, you hit your late 20s, that's, you're hitting your prime. That's kind of like, I don't know if that's the case anymore. And what is the prime age for a female disc golfer? We're seeing right now with Own and Kat and Paige and Tatar that. It sure looks like your early 30s is looking kind of shiny. Like, that looks great considering none of the young guns can seem to beat them. I mean, Haley obviously got the U.S. women's and can win at any given time. Own has been dominating, you know, the podiums. She can't quite get that win, but I'd be kind of surprised if she got a win just because it feels like there's always someone that can just throw a little bit better than her. Like, she seems like a top five lock, but a very difficult win. And I don't know. I don't know what the ideal age right now is for an FPO golfer to be mature enough to win at the top of their game. Is it 30? Is it 28? Is it your early 20s?
Because Chris is proving it's 30.
that's just it. Yeah, she's like 30 or 33 or something. Like you said, and
she knows she's 30.
She's Tatar's 30. I thought she was 33.
I wish we had this broken down. I have her born in 92.
Do you? Okay. So yeah, that would put her at 30 then, but
make her 30.
That was according to her cross country skiing profile.
World championship when she's winning some other. Okay, Tatar is dominating some other sport.
She's 31 is what Pilcher is saying. I trust what Pilcher says because that guy seems to know a lot.
Okay.
Are we looking at your early 30s as the prime of your disc golf career as an FPO player? Maybe.
I think so. Look at Ricky. Ricky's 29.
Yeah.
I mean,
is he past his prime?
You know?
I mean, Macbeth feels like he's...
I don't think so.
I mean, Macbeth just won Worlds, but it does feel like he's on, like, past his prime. Like, it feels like his prime was, like, 3 or 4 years ago when he was dominating the sport.
I think age is irrelevant in our sport right now.
I don't think so.
Look at Cannonburg.
Not at all.
The length of the courses.
Exactly.
And how much you have to play.
It's different. I think you could have looked at it 10 years ago.
How can age be irrelevant?
10 years ago, you could say, a player can easily play well into their late 30s and 40s because the courses didn't require nearly as much damage on your body. We're seeing players break down in their early 20s from how hard they're throwing.
Yeah.
It just, and the injuries.
I purposely played less than 20 events. And again, you won't be able to see this because my stats aren't available on PGA.com.
Just renew your membership, Nate.
Holy shit. Where's my $75? Yeah. Let me go renew you right now.
I'll do it, you whiny little.
$11,794. Yes!
I
off the dome!
Look at Terry.
There.
I purposely played less.
I just
less
changed
than
your name
20.
To not available.
Okay. Is it time for another beer?
So I purposely try to play less than 20 events a year. And
that's cute.
I'm famously quoted as saying, when I came home from the team tournament in San Diego, which was the first weekend in December, I put my bag in the closet and I didn't play disc golf until the middle of January. I did that every year because I knew that mental and physical release and not doing that was important. Now, does that work these days? I don't know. They're required to play more. The courses are longer. It's more demanding. I feel like it's a young man's game. Yep. I really, really do. More than golf. I think golf is a little bit more... Yeah. I mean, it's super demanding, by the way. Golf is like insanely demanding. Yep. But for some reason, I just feel like disc golf is just a little bit of a younger person's game than regular golf.
Well, and the women play shorter courses, and they don't seem to throw with as much violent, other than Jen Allen, who crushes and the way her her throw is. But it doesn't feel like they're putting as much stress on their body as some of the men, some of the men's players do. Again, other than Jen Allen, right. who just
I think they're exerting like Haley themselves King. At 100%. It's just it's just relative.
Well, it just looks more elegant. And,
no, you know, it's relative.
Yeah,
it's relative. But is their 100%? And I don't know because I'm not a physiologist or anything. Is their 100% going to hurt their bodies as much as a men's 100%? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know that.
Yeah. No, I do know.
Okay, I'm glad you know, Terry. I'm glad you're a physiologist or whatever, kinesiologist or
whatever
zoologist. I don't know what you are, Terry.
No, I do know. Spock, I'm not taking off my shirt. Quit being silly.
If you look at Terry's shirt and cross your eyes, a giraffe shows up.
Yeah.
Well, if he took off this shirt, he'd still have another couple of shirts on.
Yeah, I got to stay fully covered up. Ryan Pilcher asks, is Nate purposefully not renewing because he thinks the PDGA should make his stats available as a world champion?
No, or what did he say?
Or because you don't have the $75. No, he didn't say that.
Okay. The reason I'm not renewing is because I don't play tournaments. It's a very simple answer. Obviously I have the $75, but I've always looked at it as I'm not playing and I don't plan on playing tournaments. Well, maybe tomorrow, I don't know.
Maybe tomorrow. We'll
weather dependent, you know.
I'm a fair weather golfer, man of my own art.
You know it. I don't plan on playing tournaments, so I just decide not to renew my membership. Now, I of course support the PDGA, and I've always supported the PDGA in multitudes of ways, as a player, as a you know, now commentating, and all that stuff. So it has. I'm obviously just joking when I talk.
However, let's get real here.
It's less for me, and it's more for other people.
Yeah, let's get real here for a moment. As a one- or three-time world champion, is there a world where your statistics and all of your accolades and statistics, don't slur, should all be available to the public?
Look, I would say a lot of them are.
Just not on the PDGA page.
No, okay, wait for Nate. Okay. So right now, if we go to pdga.com/members/11794 or whatever the fuck you are, we can't see what you're at.
No.
So, because you're not a renewed member, even though you're a three-time world champ, so specifically with regard to the PDGA, who are watching, love you, should your statistics be available?
I don't believe my statistics should be available. I believe my tournament finishes should be. So
Wait.
Like,
we're splitting the hairs.
I don't think my ratings.
What
did you just say?
Did you just say that? What? I said we're splitting the hairs you don't have. Look how much hairs on this head.
And you're trying to talk about what, my hair? Yours are just grown out more. Don't even get started.
You wish. If there's one thing I can beat you on, it's hair. That's it.
There's a lot of other things you can beat me on, Terry.
Let's have another beverage. Give me that beer.
The amount of
okay
rock stars you've drank this week.
That's a good call. Let's finish this. No, seriously. So what do you mean? Your results? What?
Well, the results are stats, kind of. Like, the PDGA doesn't really do any deep analytical stats, so it's kind of the same thing, though, is what I'm
right,
thinking.
But, like, ratings and ratings history all that. I get that part. And I'm obviously not whitewashed from the actual tournament pages. So you could say go to...
Yeah, if you, like, dig.
If you go to 05 Worlds, you can see the rounds I shot and all that.
Okay.
It would just be nice to say go to 11794 and just see the tournaments I've played and the places I finished. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't understand why people can't see that. Now, and somebody could sit and explain to me from the other side of the coin and say, well, here's the reasons why and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. And I think everybody's, I just think the PDGA has, you know, they obviously have a way that their kind of business runs and the decisions that they've made, and that's fine. At least you can go to that tournament and still see it, and it's not like I'm not there.
Yeah, I...
So the history's still there.
No, this honestly, this poses a really big question, and I'm being 100% because nobody supports the PDGA as much as I do. I've been a member.
We all do. We all have
since
for years.
You know the mid '90s. I renewed every year. I've always made the claim that even if I broke my right arm tomorrow, I'd still sign up for the PDGA. I'd renew.
So
that's not a secret.
Tournaments and
no, but that's not a secret. I've just always been a supporter. The conversation consistently comes up though of. And Tom Schott, Hall of Famer and all around, and 2011 World's TD and TD extraordinaire, just tonight had talked about Hall of Famers possibly having free entries to tournaments and all these other scenarios. And it just poses a bigger question of where do we draw the line? You know, Ken Climo isn't renewing his PDGA membership every year, but somebody else is doing it just so the stats
can
be available.
No, but he's in the Hall of Fame.
I know, and so, but yet at the same time, the Disc Golf Hall of Fame is not the PDGA Hall of Fame. Those are two separate entities. So
you're saying somebody's actually renewing Ken?
Yes, somebody else is renewing Kenny. That's the rumor that's gone around.
Gotcha.
So the question is, where do we draw a theoretical thanks line? World champions, Hall of Famers, 100-plus PDGA winners. Like, there's so many different places where you could draw a magical line as to who should automatically have their stats renewed, who should have a PDGA membership, who should be renewed for life. Those are all questions that constantly come up. And I think they're valid arguments for people to have, but...
I'll say this.
You're an interesting example.
I don't draw a line. I don't draw a special line. I just say you were a member when you played those tournaments. Those tournaments results should theoretically still be available on your page. Mm-hmm. But after you stop paying, your rating becomes invalid. And that to me is my line. I think that should be for everybody. I don't want it to be like, well, hey, you won one tournament, so you get this free pass. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking for that. I'm just saying if history says somebody wants to look up Nate Doss, what if I was dead? You know, and I couldn't renew. Could you just look up and say, hey, like, what did Steve Tufte do? You know, he's a early thousand, you know, two. He's like 2022 or something. Like, what did he do? I mean, he hasn't played tournaments in years, maybe. Or maybe he has. I don't know. But I'm just saying, why can't you look that up and just see what they did in one place? The ratings and all. We don't know. You don't need that. I'm just saying, in general.
Yeah.
That's my
statement. I think that's a valid question. And maybe Johnny
and
put it in
the PDGA
notes.
Could easily argue the other side. And I'm okay with that. That's totally
fine. Yeah, I don't think there's
your ratings and your finishes are part of your... benefit of being a current member.
Correct.
Therefore, we're asking you to be a current member.
And that's totally fine.
And that's fine.
I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I think Nate, I would not be opposed to the PDGA showing you, like when you go to the players page, like if I click on Nate Doss right now, I get nothing. If I click on Matty Orem right now and
Somebody in our chat should probably just go renew Nate's membership.
The player
well, save me $10 tomorrow.
That
the,
too.
The player statistics page. I would love it if, like Nate said, if they just kept the tournament results there. How much you won, whatever. And you couldn't go into the ratings details, the rating history, or career wins or whatever. Just keep that. I'm also not opposed to saying, hey, if you win, if you're a world champion, or maybe just a major champion. You know, in the open field, here's a lifetime membership for your statistics.
And that's where it starts getting dicey.
Of course it
does. Major AM,
No.
Major Pro?
No, Major Pro.
You win a major in MA55.
Nope. Major Pro.
What if there was a stats membership, like a minimum membership?
Yeah.
It was like $10. Like, I want to be a supporting member.
I'm
11794. I think that could be cool, too. Here's $10 a year.
And that doesn't get you the magazine. That doesn't get you the $10 discount on the tournaments. Just this. I could see something like that. I would totally be down for something like that. And I'm not opposed to the fact
that. Like, you're a supporting member.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Run for the board tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, we're here to announce that Nate Doss, PDGA 11794, better than our friend Matt Brock, 11792. Isn't Eric McCabe right in there? Anyway.
Eric McCabe's on our chat board, so.
Nate Doss
is
officially running for the board in 2023. You heard it here. Smashbox TV Podcast 421.
No.
I like to make shit up, Nate.
I know you do. Crystal ball. Crystal ball, Terry.
Holy cow. What else? Baseball references. Hey, Emacs out there. How you doing, buddy?
Literally just
by the way, we should throw it in the after show. Just a massive congratulations to Emac. He's now the head coach
of
the Emporia State Hornets.
Heck yeah, you are.
And, he's just a great guy, man. He was out final round at the Worlds doing some photography and
sideline reporting.
It was great to see him. Yeah,
he
checked in with you a couple of rounds. It was great to see Eric, and just super happy for the guy.
Yeah. I hope and this is a little bit self-serving, 11674 is EMAC. I hope there's some video coverage, and I think it's going to be Gatekeeper or at the end of the year through Disc Golf Network. We didn't really talk about it. It was such a crazy honor to be on the field commentating and announcing during that football game.
Yeah. During Worlds,
I'm going to tell you guys, I was legitimately nervous. There's, I don't know, a couple thousand people, whatever. It wasn't like 50,000.
It was opening night of the Emporia State football season.
D2 or D3?
D2.
D2. And
playing
Ricky
a really
Wysocki
tough team out
and,
of Oklahoma.
Yeah, and Ricky Wysocki and Eric McCabe were out there throwing discs. And I had to introduce them. And then at the last moment, they threw in two of their superstar basketball players.
Yeah.
And to throw discs.
Tall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're biggins.
Taller than you, Terry? Wow.
It was, a little bit taller than me. And
not without his hair, because he's got so much of it.
I do have a lot of hair. Honestly, though, I was legitimately nervous for the entire time leading into it and then about the first 3 seconds of it. And then as soon as I was able to get out the first name, Mayum Boom. That was the name. Mayum Boom. He was on the football team. And then after I got him, and then I had to, just talk about Ricky and whatever, I just remember them saying, hey, this is like a 6-minute segment, and you're going to talk disc golf, and you're going to try and promote disc golf, and we're going to have Ricky Wysocki, and we're going to have Eric McCabe throwing. It was, I'm going to put it on my resume as a career highlight. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. So I had a lot of fun with it. And I don't know if it'll be on a Gatekeeper piece or a Disc Golf Network piece at the end of the year. But thank you, Emac. Thank you, Jeremy Rusko. Then we went up in a little President's suite and got a few beverages.
Well, and I'll say this, after that halftime show, the Emporia State football team went on to dominate.
Smashed them.
In the second half.
Smashed them. Kind of like
nice job, T Dog.
Crux.
Wow.
So that's how we do it, Johnny.
We should probably let Doss go. You're an early waker, though, aren't you, Doss? You're going to be up in like 4 hours or something.
What do you got to do tomorrow?
I'm brewing.
We got a flex start to run.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Terry's running a flex start tomorrow.
Oh, what are you doing?
I my alarm's set for 5. It's currently 10:48 here. My alarm is set for 5. And I'll be at the brewery at about 5:20, mashing in a beer. We're actually brewing tomorrow, so I'll be mashing in about 5:30.
So I read something that there could possibly be a CO2 shortage. Is that anything?
Shortage? Yeah, I read that. I read that same article.
Just backtrack to CO1s. They're not quite as good, but they'll work.
Little less stable.
Yeah. I did read that same article that there's a potential for a CO2 shortage. That might be regional. Personally, from our supplier, from CO2, I have not heard anything.
Well, that's good.
We actually just got a delivery of CO2 like 2 days ago. So,
What do you need CO2 for?
CO2 is carbonation. People. I mean, it's carbonation.
Yeah.
Obviously.
We need to be able to carbonate the beer. That's what
Terry does bubbles. For Whippets.
We actually, yeah,
yeah.
That's actually is that nitrogen or
I don't know.
It's
don't
all
know.
Of it.
It's all of it. Anyways, we also push and move finished product with CO2 as well. And there's different schools of thoughts in a brewery, but once the product is fermented and completed. You don't want to put it through a pump because that can actually knock out some of the flavor out of the beer. So we actually just move it with pressure. So you like fill a tank with pressure and then it counterfills to a different tank or into kegs or whatever. So I just, for everybody at home, 148 of you watching, when we do commentary, we're in the booth here and then we click a button and this is actually,
that's how I see
the lighting that we have.
Yeah. Turn the lights out.
So
hey, I can do that too.
Romantic.
Yeah. Nice.
Wow.
And so
Tear Bearer in the dark.
So
when they doss.
I'm wondering, would it be smarter to have you finish the after show in the dark or
he's usually in the dark about most things.
Woo! How long has this thing been going?
A while, Terry. It's almost 1 AM here.
About 10 minutes. Okay. Holy cow. Well, let's start to wrap it up then. What a wild night it's been. A couple more people signed up for tomorrow's Flex Start. Super excited.
I just signed up.
37
Just wait
people.
For me.
Yeah, I will.
Somebody probably signed me up.
Yeah, I mean, let's renew this Nate Doss 11794.
No, please, everybody. I mean, again, there's only 150 of you out there, but please don't. It's okay. I'm okay with it. I just talk a little trash. And
for what it's worth, talking about that real quick. Everybody, if you're interested in Nate Doss stats, you can go to StatMando. You can look up Nate Doss, and they have a lot. They don't have quite the ratings details and such, but they have a lot of information out there in one place for Nate Doss. So you can kind of just like, look at that. You can sort it by year.
Look at this.
So go back to that, Johnny.
Oh, sure.
Go back to
that, Johnny. Holy cow, look at all those.
Because the last tournament I played, which was the Zootown Open, you can see there I took second place.
You would. To who?
To Garrett Gerthy.
You.
And we had an incredible battle. I mean, it was
you shot a 10.55.
Awesome.
Damn, you did.
And I kind of blew it at the end, but I'll also say that Garrett kind of took it from me, and he earned that victory. But being that the last tournament I played was second place, if somebody were to ask me what I'm most proud of in my career, of course there's Worlds and things of that nature, but I'm most proud of the fact that I took double the number of second place finishes than first place finishes in my career. So I always say the career of Nate Doss is a career of what could have been, not what was.
Did you know that that was going to be your last event?
No.
No?
I did not.
Because I know, obviously, you had plans for
the brewery
and such, but...
Yeah. Well, we played that tournament. That was in Montana. We drove back to Bend the next day. Mm-hmm. And the day after that, we started demoing our location that we're currently in now. We assumed that we could get demo done and then construction would be started and then we would actually go play the Worlds in 2018, which was going to be in Vermont. That was our plan. We were actually registered for the Worlds. We hadn't got the plane tickets yet, but we were all ready to go. And then it was clear, like 2 months in, that there was no way we could leave. There was no way. We were so in depth in the construction and building and everything that we couldn't leave. And that being said, stopping playing there in June and then competing in like early September for Worlds that year, where was our game going to be? It just didn't seem like the right time to go play. So we decided not to play. And then I always assumed I would still go play a couple events a year, like the Masters Cup or Beaver State. But I love my job. I literally love brewing beer, being at Bevel, and I love doing the commentary. So it's you know, I'm obviously caught between a rock and a hard place, but or a beer and a birdie kind of thing. Yeah. But it's okay.
Which,
I didn't know to answer your question.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you could have been you guys could have been the Barsby Bjergis spoilers.
Maybe. Anything's possible. You know, obviously, I had taken an injury in 2018. You know, I had hurt my shoulder. I pulled out of the Memorial. That was the only tournament that I ever did not complete in my career. And actually, right after I finished that round, I walked right over to Terry, and Terry said, let's go. And
yeah.
And we commentated that the rest of that tournament. Johnny was switching the show. And
yeah. That was old school style. You were standing behind players commentating about them.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. That was 2018 still.
Yeah.
That was 2018. And that was the Terry Cloth, Tear Bear, T-Square, the whole, mm-hmm. I came up with every name under the sun during that show. And yeah. So, you know, look, I think as an athlete, you always have to be proud of what you've done. But when you're in it, you don't really see that. And now that it's been several years, I can look back on what I did personally and say, I'm proud of what I was able to accomplish. And that's why I can sit in the commentary booth and just be so proud of the other players. I don't think of Ricky as a threat anymore, or as Paul as a threat. I look at them as athletes. That's my diamond, yeah. You know, so...
Yeah. Real recognizes
the sappy stuff, Terry.
I love it. All right,
until
guys,
they open a brewery in Bend, until you've got the Macbeth Brewery next door in Bend.
Yeah, that son of a. It's going to be. Since Ricky nor Macbeth drink, it will be fun to see them open competing breweries in Jackson.
That's what I'll say about when we were starting to kind of talk. He says, you should name your brewery responsibly. Because every commercial on television at the end says responsibly. And he says, in that case, they would be supporting you. So, the mind of a great champion. Pre-marketing, drink responsibly.
Drink Wisconsibly, I think, is a friend of ours that I actually know and yep. Working on some stuff. But that's another story for another tournament. Anyway, wow, what a night it's been. Thank you guys so much.
421. Congratulations, both of you, Johnny V.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
421. This is just ridiculous.
422.
Ryan Pilcher says, is the feed getting choppy for anyone else? Everything's getting choppy.
It did. I think the feed.
We're going to call
it. I think Terry spilled his beer on his laptop or something. I don't know.
What the hell did you do, Johnny?
It just
I'm
broke up.
You.
It broke up for a few seconds. It could be on my side. It could be, I don't know. We'll see.
Ew,
it's fine, though.
I did. I saw some.
Drop packets.
Some packets.
Packets
pitch,
were
you know.
Dropped.
Yes.
Folks, I'm going to go drop some packets, if you know what I mean. That's not a euphemism
don't drop
for
microphones.
Anything, but I'm going to drop pockets. All right. Nate Doss, it's been a pleasure. We love you, buddy.
Love you too, pal.
Johnny V, you're all right.
I'm here.
This has been Podcast 421's After Show. Thank you guys for joining us. One hell of a run it's been.
421 shows. It's amazing. Yeah.
Only 420 more to go
and
before
Ricky's
my deal with the devil
them,
is.
Ricky's done 9 of them from his bed.
I think it's more than 9.
9? More than 9?
No,
probably.
It's not more than
that,
9.
That's Waisaki. I don't know. Jumping into bed with Waisaki, and we're closing it out. For Nate, Johnny V, I'm Terry Miller, the Disc Golf Guy. That's been Podcast 421's After Show. We'll see you for the live broadcast this weekend, and shit, we'll get wild next week. Well, who knows where it's going to go.
And tomorrow, just for the flex of it, Terry.
Just for the flex of it. Whoop, whoop. We'll see you tomorrow. You step inside the Smashbox.
Later, all.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.